Alison, it's an unusual title. What is Fresh Dialogues, or what are Fresh Dialogues?
Well, thank you for the question, Mark. It's great to join you. Fresh Dialogues is basically an interview series featuring business leaders in Silicon Valley and people who have strong views on sustainability. I try to get people you've heard of, people like Martin Sheen and Meryl Streep and Elon Musk, to talk with me. And I've been pretty successful with it so far.
Yeah, it's quite a cast list, that, isn't it? What sort of things have you been talking to them about?
Well, Elon Musk, I mean, there's a lot to talk about with him, but the main focus of our dialogue is obviously Tesla Motors, the efficient electric car company. And defying naysayers, he's really made an incredible success of that company. I don't know if you've seen any in London yet, but on the streets and highways here in Silicon Valley, they're almost getting as common as Priuses. It's amazing how popular they are here.
Right, okay. And what about, I mean, that's Silicon Valley, is it? It's a different sort of person in Silicon Valley, I would imagine, from the rest of mainland USA, isn't it?
Yes, that's true. In fact, the recent figures that just came out this week show that I think over 50% of the Teslas sold in the US were sold in California. It's a popular state for electric vehicles.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine you are a convert to the idea of green technology. You're a proponent of it, yeah?
Well, it's hard to be here in Silicon Valley and not absorb some of the green focus. There's a lot of companies here and a lot of people that are very in touch with the environment, and sustainability is something that, you know, a lot of companies focus on these days.
So tell me how you got started with Fresh Dialogues and how did that come about?
Well, I spent some time with KQED, which is our local public radio station, worked with Michael Krasny's forum team there, and loved doing pre-interviews with people, and decided, okay, I need to find a niche. I can't do all things
considered.
Oh,
not another niche. Crikey, we've had a load of niches on this program.
The environment and sustainability was something that, you know, I felt passionate about, and I knew there were, you know, it was an expanding area here. So that's what I plunged into. I started it in 2008, and it's just been growing since then. I have a lot of fun with it, and I also contribute to Public Radio International the World. So, yeah, there are a lot of outlets for my work.
And is that a passion that you've always had from being young?
I've always loved, you can probably hear, I'm originally from Scotland.
I was going to ask you whereabouts in Scotland you're from.
I'm a Glaswegian, yeah. And came out here, thought I'd come out here for a couple of years and ended up staying for 22. And the weather's a wee bit better out here. But yes, when I grew up in Scotland, I definitely, you know, I was a hill walker. I was a Munro bagger. So
for the uninitiated, you know, that's Munros are hills in Scotland that are above 3,000 feet, and people set out to climb them all, don't they?
That's correct. Yeah. And 3,000 feet doesn't sound much when you're in California.
No, but
that's
in Scotland, it's high, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what is it that makes you so keen on this sort of green message?
I think it's one that's resonating more and more. Climate change is a big issue facing the world. And rather than looking at it as doom and gloom, you know, it's a world problem. People in Silicon Valley here, and, you know, people around the world too, but predominantly Silicon Valley, they're saying, okay, we have a challenge, let's come up with a solution. So I love seeing, you know, the multicultural entrepreneurs here coming up with sustainable energy, renewable energy, sustainable ways of doing business. And it's a really exciting area to get deep on, to interview people on. And I think it's, you know, the triple bottom line is a huge issue here. You know, it's good, you know, you make money from it, but it's also good for the environment and it's good for community. So that's something that, you know, I find is very rewarding.
You heard Gene Lee talking in the first half of the program about life in North Korea. Just going to bring in Gene for a moment. Can you imagine anybody trying to convince people in North Korea, the North Korean government, about a green message? Or does such a thing even, have they even heard of the green message?
I'm not so sure they've heard of the green message, but I think they would be receptive to something like that. They have been passing some laws related to environmental protection, long overdue considering how they've ravaged their environment. But they're certainly looking for business savvy ways to maximize what little they have, the few resources that they have. So maybe it's time for somebody to take that message over to Pyongyang.
And I bet if they bring in a law, then it sticks.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but it's a first step.
I wouldn't want to break the law in North Korea. I mean, how do you fancy that as a challenge, Alison? Maybe opening up a sort of fresh dialogue in Pyongyang.
That would be a fascinating challenge. I think the solution is quite easy. I mean, if anyone does go over there to sit down and make the case that, you know, if you can use your assets more efficiently, then, you know, it's a win-win-win. You know, it's good for your bottom line, it's good for a community, and it's good for the environment. I mean, I'm sure they're looking, you know, even in North Korea, at what's going on in Beijing, you know, and the level of pollution there. At some stage, someone's got to say, okay, the buck stops here, we need to do something about it. And I mean, China, of course, is waking up to that, but, you know, they've got an uphill struggle to change their energy mix and make it more renewable and non-polluting. But I think they're moving in that direction with their solar expansion. I think last year China activated the most solar in the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's got that reputation for being a dirty polluter, but, you know, they're moving in the right direction. And I wouldn't be surprised if North Korea is looking at that too.
Jean, what is the scale of environmental degradation in North Korea? I mean, what does if you drive out into the countryside, what does it look like?
Well, I was just going to point out to Alison that actually what we are seeing on the small scale is that the new street lamps that are going up are mostly solar powered. So they've all got solar powered panels on them. And then, of course, the construction of this massive hydroelectric power station northwest of Pyongyang is feeding the capital. So the electricity supply has improved dramatically. But yes, to speak to the contrast between city and country, it is once you leave Pyongyang, as soon as you drive out, you see these, you know, this is a country that is 80% mountains. It's an extremely mountainous country, but they have cut down so many of their trees. And that has just, they've denuded their mountains. And what happens then is that when they get these terrible monsoon rains in the late summer, that rain just completely washes away the landscape and strikes these villages that are at the bottom of the mountains. So I did go to visit a village that had a hamlet that was completely wiped out, an entire hamlet just wiped out by these landslides. And so there is a reforestation campaign going on a small scale, similar to what South Korea conducted years ago. But it is quite a contrast for me. I live in South Korea. I go back and forth. I see this denuded landscape, and then I come to South Korea and see these rolling hills. It's the same mountain ranges covered with trees. So yeah, it's heartbreaking. And sometimes on some of my Twitter feeds, my Instagram feeds, you'll see the images where I contrast one day in North Korea in the countryside versus, you know, the next day when I'm back in South Korea, and what the difference looks like in a country that's taking care of its land and a country that has damaged its land.
So if you took a satellite picture of the Korean peninsula, one half of it would be green, the other would be sort of bare and brown.
Well, of course, during certain times of the year, it is very green in North Korea as well. But I think the difference is the forestation. The deforestation of North Korea is just is shocking.
How do you feel about that when you hear of destruction on that sort of scale, Alison? And there you are in Silicon Valley, where people are doing completely the opposite. They're very, very clued into the environment for whatever reason, and probably recycle everything in sight, and, you know, go around in electric vehicles. Are you struck by the contrast?
Of course. I mean, there are a lot of contrasts, not just in the environment, between North Korea and the rest of the world. Absolutely agree. But I'm an optimist, and I'm really reassured to hear that, you know, they're doing solar power streetlights, and maybe they'll introduce LEDs, which are a lot more efficient for bulbs, etc. So As I say, I'm an optimist and I focus on the good, and glad to hear that, you know, they're moving in that direction. But yeah, reforestation is very important. I think it's to do with short term, long term. More and more governments, you know, around the world, not just in North Korea, could do with taking a longer view and not just going for the quick buck, but looking at, you know, how can we do this in a more sustainable manner? How can we even harvest our trees in a more sustainable manner, so there are trees left for our children and grandchildren. I think that's the view. That was one thing that Martin Sheen shared with me. He quoted, when I spoke with him a few years ago, he quoted an old Hebrew adage saying, if you have children, you basically have hostages to the future. In other words, you know, we need to have a thought to, you know, what's coming after us and use our scarce resources.
What's he like, Martin Sheen?
You know what? I have to say, if you ever get a chance to interview him, go for it. It's like talking with your favorite uncle. I mean, so down to earth, very, very charming, very fun. And I find when I talk with Americans, there's something about my accent that triggers something in them. Martin Sheen started, you know, his mother was Irish. He started, you know, into his Irish accent with me. Meryl Streep was the same. I think she was channeling my British accent. After a while, I felt like I was talking to Margaret Thatcher. She had
I'll tell you what, I think we should introduce you to our newsreader here, Fiona MacDonald. She's from the Highlands of Scotland. She thinks that you sound like Sheila Easton.
Oh, that's too funny. Well, that's right. Sheila Easton was out here, or is still out here. That's too funny. Yeah, I love her accent. She's very Scottish to me. I'm a big fan.